Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, why don't you visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Bible doctrines versus doctrines of men when we come back. You know, Charles Lyell was one of the pillars of modern geology, and it was Charles Lyell that published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe Lyell's concepts don't even know who it was that originated these ideas. But it was from Charles Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins has been devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood have been strictly ruled out. And this is called science. All right. Now, listen to this. Did you know the sun is shrinking? That's right. It was reported over the news wire some years back, and it made this surprising statement. It said the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Now, scientists have been watching the sun for over 100 years now, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then that would total 1% per millennium. And if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, then it would have been double its present diameter. And if we go back just 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would have been touching the Earth 93 million miles in diameter. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. All right, now let's think for a minute. What did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Remember, they told us that happened 65 million years ago. But only 20 million years ago, the sun would have been touching the Earth 93 million miles in diameter. Hey, wait a minute. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on these kinds of pseudo-scientific lies. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the banner of science. And that's one of the many lessons that we teach here in our Mosaic Law School, conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email, send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Okay, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of Bible doctrines versus the doctrines of men. And men just don't have any end to doctrines. In fact, we have 476, last time I saw a number now, 476 501c3 tax-exempt churches in the United States. That's not all the churches. There's a lot of them that are not tax-exempt. In fact, the last time I saw a number on that, there's about 6,000 1,000 churches in the United States that are not 501c3 churches. I mean, that's kind of a shocker. Now, there's about 330,000 churches in the country. So you have 330,000, and out of that, 6,000. What is 6 divided by 330? Oh, my God, it's 0.018. Well, that's about 0.2% of the churches aren't government churches. All the rest of them are government entities. They're 501c3 corporate, state-sponsored, state religious churches, commonly called Christian. Well, those churches all have doctrines. Doctrines. Those are the beliefs that people hold. The beliefs. And one of the beliefs that's very prevalent among Christian churches is voting. Boy, do they get excited about voting. They want you to vote for this guy and vote for that guy and get involved in politics and register and be sure you get out there and vote. I got to thinking about that and I said, well, how did Jesus vote? You know, what did Elijah do? Did he go down and register to vote for Ahab and Jezebel, or did he vote for the opposition party? How has voting and democracy affected the tribes of Israel, the people who are the central core here of the Hebrew Scriptures? Now, today in Western civilization, you know, Anglo-Saxon administration is the rule of thumb, and we believe pretty hot and heavy in this thing of voting and democracy. And it's democratic this and democratic that and democracy this and democracy that. I mean, the word democracy is just bandied about everywhere. Did you know that the Bible has a lot to say about voting? I'm always surprised when I hear Christians talking about voting, because the God of the Bible, I don't know if you knew this or not, but the creator of the universe, and going back, you know, to Genesis 1, 2, 3, along in there, the guy that invented human beings at the Garden of Eden, did you know that that guy is not a Democrat? I just thought I'd point that out. He's a dictator. In fact, in the scripture, from time to time, he calls himself the King of Kings. So that's in case Queen Elizabeth got a little uppity, you know. He comes along and says, hey, Queenie, I want to let you know that I'm the King of Kings. I mean, there's kings out there. Like King Juan Carlos of Spain, you know. And then he comes along and says, hey, wake up over there. I want you to know that I'm the King of Kings. And he says, I'm the Lord of Lords. Now, Lord means master. So, you know, if you're a master, and he wanted to come in on the scene, he says, and I'm the master of the masters. So, you know, if you're a Bill Gates, and you're the master over this great corporate entity, I want you to know that I'm the master of masters. You know, I'm the master of Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and George Bush, and Richard Armitage, and so on. I just thought I'd point that out to you over here. And when it comes to voting over here, in Exodus 6, verse 7, he says, I'm going to take you to me for a people, and I will be to you a God. And you shall know that I am the Eternal, your God, which brings you out of and from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And so in Exodus chapter 6. Now, this is before Moses, you know, takes us out of Egypt. He walks up and he says, you know, I see you people over here. You're Egyptian slaves. And I'm gonna free you people. I'm going to take you to myself. As opposed to, I'm going to run for office and see whether or not I'm popular enough to win the popular vote among the slaves here in Egypt. I just thought I'd point that out. He didn't come up there and say to Moses, now, I want you to go out there and organize an election and let's see if we can get some loyal opposition to go in and let's see if we can't get Republicans and Democrats together in a bipartisan vote here to vote me in as the God of Israel. So in case you were thinking that maybe God was running for political office, he made an announcement. He said, I'm going to select you people out. I'm going to take you to myself, and I'm going to be your God, and you're going to be my people. Now watch this trick. He actually pulled that off. And I don't know if you're aware of that or not, but that's recorded here in the book of Exodus up through about Exodus 15. And when it was all said and done, there was a little argument that came down at the Red Sea. Now, actually, it wasn't the Red Sea. See, that's another fiction. Christians have it in their mind that Moses crossed the Red Sea. The Bible does not tell you that Moses crossed the Red Sea. I don't know where you got the idea that the Red Sea crossing was the place where we went across the water, you know, where it was divided. It was the Gulf of Aqaba, and we left the Sinai Peninsula and went into Arabia. I just thought I'd point that out to you. And at that, what we commonly call the Red Sea crossing, there was a controversy. The Egyptians, who said, okay, we're going to release our sovereignty over you. We're going to release you people. You're free to go. He changed his mind and he went out there to the Red Sea. And there was a military operation. It was a kind of a short, plain, easy to understand military operation. There, Josephus tells us there was 450,000 Egyptians. And there was about 3.5 million Israelites. And they were boxed up on the beach down a box canyon, trapped, no way out. Couldn't go up and down the beach any further. It was hemmed in by mountains. Couldn't go back because the Egyptian army was there. And so God, you know, being God, and tricky as he is, he went out there and he divided the Gulf of Aqaba into two walls of water. I've said they were 110 feet tall, and you know, on each side. No, actually, they were 240 feet tall on each side. It was higher than I'd given it credit for. But anyway, and so the Israelites went through on dry land, through the bottom of the Gulf of Aqaba, over to the other side, which was in Arabia. It's about 9 miles across there. 9 miles where they crossed. So it wasn't a short trek. And the Egyptians went down into there, and they went across, and they were in hot pursuit. It says hot pursuit. And so when they got out in the middle, the walls of water collapsed and killed them all. So that was 450,000 Egyptians died in about 20 minutes there in the Red Sea. All right, so now got up on the other side over there. Now, there was only one God, only one president, only one guy over there that was directing operations, and that was God Almighty himself. And up to this moment in time, he had not been elected. The people had not had any opportunity to choose this God. Now, when they got out to Mount Sinai, which is over in Arabia, by the way, it's not in the Sinai Peninsula, it's over in Arabia. They got over to Mount Sinai, and they had nothing but problems. I mean, they just had problems and problems and problems. And in Numbers chapter 16, there was a fellow by the name of Korah. And this is called, and if you look at the top of the Bible page, it'll tell you, it's called Korah's Rebellion. And this guy Korah came up to Moses one day, and he said that Moses was taking too much upon himself, and that seeing how he was a Levite and Moses was a Levite, and that they were all Levites, and that they should share power. It was kind of a power sharing political event in which Korah was dissatisfied with the position that he was holding. And he wanted to increase his political power. You know, kind of like, you know, guys like Henry Paulson and Henry Kissinger and George Bush and David Rockefeller and Richard Armitage, you know, the princes of the Israelites. the political people, the bankers, the people that meant something, not just the truck drivers and longshoremen and electricians, but the bankers and the politicians and the businessmen of the day. See, so I thought I'd tell you this story because this is voting at its best. This is the political process in ancient Israel at its apex. If you want to know how God views democracy and representative government and how he and politics, I mean, this is the chapter for you. It starts off in verse 1. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, and Reuben took men. And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. It was the Bilderberger meeting of their day. I mean, we're talking about the Council on Foreign Relations. We're talking about the Trilateral Commission. We're talking about the Bilderbergers. They rose up and they had a meeting. And they said, hey, this Moses character over here, he's a nice guy. So they rose up before Moses. They gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And they said to Moses and Aaron, you take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Eternal is among them. Wherefore then lift up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord, of God. And when Moses heard this, he fell upon his face. And he spoke unto Korah and to all of the company, saying, even tomorrow the Lord, the God, will show you who are his, and who is holy, and will cause him to come near unto him. Even him whom he has chosen will he cause to come near unto him. This do. Now take you censers, Korah, and all of your company, your 250 princes over here, your David Rockefellers and your Henry Paulsons and George Bushes and Henry Kissingers, all of you, take your censers. We're going to have an election. This is democracy at its finest. And put fire therein, and put incense in them before the Eternal tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord does choose, he shall be holy. And you take too much upon you, you sons of Levi. So Moses said unto Korah, here I pray you, you sons of Levi, seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel, to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Eternal, and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them? Now he has brought you near to him, and all your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you, and seek you now the priesthood also? This guy Korah was no little guy. By today's standards, we would call these 250 princes in Israel, we would call them representatives in the House of Representatives or senators in the Senate. We would call them the administrators of the bureaucracy, the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Treasury, the Secretary of Transportation. These were the political offices. Hell, Korah already was in the government. It's just that they didn't control the White House. And so Korah and the 250, the loyal Democrats, they said, we want to take over the White House as well as the Congress. So Moses, who had been selected by God, at least to all intents and purposes, it was God that appeared to Moses at the burning bush. It was God that sent Moses to talk to Pharaoh. And so Moses was just kind of naturally the guy that handled the 10 plague program, between the Israelites and Pharaoh. And it was just kind of Moses that led the way out to the Gulf of Aqaba crossing. And it was just kind of Moses, that led the way across the Gulf of Aqaba. And it was just kind of Moses that went up on top of Mount Sinai to get the 10 commandments. And you know, it was just kind of, well, it would just kind of evolved that way, didn't it? And so here's Moses being challenged now by Korah. Verse 10, he says, it's been brought, and he has brought you near to him and all of your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you. And do you seek the priesthood also? For which cause both you and all your company are gathered together against the Eternal? And what is Aaron that you murmur against him? And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which said, we will not come up. Is it a small thing, in verse 13, that you have brought us up out of the land that flows with milk and honey to kill us in this wilderness, except you make yourself altogether a prince over us? They accused Moses of appropriating the office of a dictator. They called him Adolf Hitler. Just in case you were wondering, the people hated Moses. He didn't have a friend there. They just hated him with a purple passion. And on several occasions, they sought to stone him to death. And when God had had a belly full of it on two or three occasions, he says, Moses, stand out of the way. I'm going to consume all this congregation. Moses interceded for us three times and said, now, God, you know, wake up, smell the coffee here. You got a covenant here that you made with Abraham, a covenant you made with Isaac, and a covenant that made with Jacob. Now you got three contracts in full force and effect here. And you know, God said, damn. Yeah, you're right, Moses. Yeah, I got these three contracts over here. Yeah, okay. And so three times now Moses interceded on our behalf. I'm not quite sure why he did that. I think if I would have been Moses, I'd have said, right on, God, just me and you. Get rid of those suckers over there and let me and you make a deal. But, you know, Moses was a different breed of cat. And of course, God, this God here, I'm not talking about gods in general, the average run-of-the-mill God, he's an ordinary black cat. But this God is a different cat with a different stripe, wouldn't you say? He says in verse 14, moreover, you have not brought us into a land that flows with milk and honey, or given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. So they were really bummed out because they left Egypt that they called the land of milk and honey. I mean, they were slaves over there. It'd be like you black people, you know, calling Mississippi, the land of milk and honey. And then before Abe Lincoln could get you all moved to Chicago, you know, you're out here trying to kill him, you know. Come on, give him a little time would be my observation. But anyway, here they were. They're out here in the wilderness, down here at the bottom of Mount Sinai. They haven't got out to the fields yet in Canaan, and they haven't struck out into the land of milk and honey. And boy, Moses was very wroth, and he said to the Eternal, respect not their offering. I have not taken one ass from them, neither have I hurt one of them. He was a little bummed out. He hadn't done anything to these people, and they were accusing him. See? Well, I guess that's what happens when you're at the top. You know, the king's crown rests lightly upon his head. So Moses said to Korah, be thou and all of your company before the Eternal, you and they, and Aaron tomorrow. And take every man his censer and put incense in him, and bring you before the Eternal every man his censer, 250 censers, you also, and Aaron each of you his censer. So here's Aaron. He's on one side, and on the other side there's 250 on the other side. And we're going to have an election. God is going to choose between the people of Korah and his 250 princes, and then Aaron. And then Aaron there would have been three. It'd be Aaron and his two sons. Because see, at that moment in time, that was the whole Aaronic priesthood, Aaron and his two boys. And then the Levites, you know, the Levitical priesthood, now numbered 250 or more, and then they're now instructed to go over to the other side of this little valley. And they took every man his censer, and they put fire in him, and they laid incense thereon, and they stood in the door of the tabernacle of the congregation with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all the congregation against them, that's against Aaron, Moses, and his two sons, under the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the glory of the Eternal appeared unto all the congregation. So now, Korah's got all the people allied against Moses and Aaron. Can you see that? This guy's got a lot of popular support. I mean, if you were out here taking public opinion polls, I don't think Moses could have polled as high as George Bush the day before he left office. I mean, if you think George Bush was unpopular, I mean, this guy Moses is standing there with his brother Aaron and his two nephews, Aaron's two sons, and it's the four of them against 3.5 million people being led by the Bilderbergers, the Trilateralists, and the Council on Foreign Relations. Boy, you talk about change. Talk about change now. I mean, these people want change. And if the people are going to vote now, I don't think Moses was less popular than Herbert Hoover. By far. He was less popular than Herbert Hoover and George Bush combined. They called him Hitler. And they said, "You take too much upon yourself, you dictator." And so, the Eternal spoke. This is God now. He spoke to Moses and Aaron. And he said, "Now you separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." Where do you think this God's sentiments lie? Picture this now. Here's the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, and the Council on Foreign Relations, represented by the representatives of the House of Representatives and the Senate of the United States, against the White House. And all we got here is the President, his brother, and his two nephews. And all the people are allied against Moses. And then you've got the public opinion polls going on out here, say, and the people are murmuring against Moses. And so here comes God the Creator. And I'm sure these people are all praying and all talking about George Bush, God bless America. You ever heard that? George Bush, all this time, God bless America. And so, here's God, this God. Now, this is a little different breed of cat. This God here told Moses. He's not talking to Korah now. He ain't talking to the Nancy Pelosi's and the Harry Reid's and the Barack Obama's. He just walked over to Moses. Hey, Mose. You separate yourself from this gang of thieves over here. And I'm going to consume them and this entire congregation, all 3.5 million of them, and he says, "I'm going to do it in a moment." I don't know what he had in mind. He was going to nuke them, maybe with a hydrogen bomb, maybe with lightning bolts. I don't know what he had in mind, but he had something. In verse 22, "And they fell on their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin? And will you be wroth with the entire congregation?" And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, "Speak unto the congregation, and you say, Get you up from about this tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram." And Moses rose up, and he went out to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation. He said, "Depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men. Depart from the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderbergers, and the House of Representatives, and the Senate of the United States, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you all be consumed in all of their sins." Yeah, that was quite a statement, wasn't it? Oh, I just kind of added in the House of Representatives and the Senate. But, you know, at the time, you know, just picture yourself in the time, then just kind of fast forward yourself up to today, you know, and and just ask yourself, you know, where do you think that the God of Israel is in the voting cycle here? Who do you think he's supporting? What do you think he would think of this if he could see what's going on here today? I mean, you know, just you and him sitting down, you know, say down at Starbucks having a latte. What do you think he'd tell you? All right, I'm going to put a mark here in the margin. Put a little arrow right here because it's the halfway point and I got to give you a reminder. Going to give you a reminder here for the Federal Communications Commission of the New Hebrides Islands in Great Britain and Western Europe, and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and a compact desk. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements and recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing and recommending will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about all of the religious and political forces of ancient Israel out here at Mount Sinai. And a guy by the name of Korah, who represents at that time the political religious establishment of the majority. Now, the majority, the people that were representing the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob only numbered 4. It was Moses and his brother Aaron, and Aaron's 2 sons. That's the only 4. And there was a priesthood here called the Levitical priesthood. Now, in America today, we call this the civil service. The civil service. That's a counterfeit of the Levitical priesthood. The head of this operation, the chief priest here in the United States, is called Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Roberts. Just thought I'd point that out. Our president of the United States is holding the office of Moses. He sits in the seat of Moses. And then we have a Congress, and our Congress over here represents the congregation. The congregation, that's all of you voters out there, all of you citizens of the United States. All we're talking about here is the 12 tribes of Israel grown great. I mean, you know, there was 3.5 million of us back here at Mount Sinai. And today there's about 1 billion of us. If you take all of the Anglo-Saxons in the world, that is all the Americans, about 300 million, and then you take all the Canadians and all of the Western Europeans, you know, all the French and the Germans and the English and the Danes and the Swedes and the Norwegians, you know, add them all together. And then there's a bunch of us scattered around throughout the world. You know, in South Africa, there's a bunch of white Anglo-Saxons down there, and probably a couple, three of you left in Rhodesia, maybe. But, you know, you tally all those people up together. Today, we number quite a few. At the time, you know, back in Moses' day, there was about 3.5 million of us, according to the census here in Numbers chapter 1 or 2. And these people were politically opposed to Moses. They thought he was an Adolf Hitler, that he was taking too much political power upon himself. And God told Moses, hey, get out of the road over here while I consume all these suckers over here. Moses did this for us 3 or 4 times. So they got up. This is Moses and Aaron. They got up from the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram on every side. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the door of their tents, and their wives and their sons and their little children. And Moses said, hereby you shall know that the Eternal, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has sent me to do all of these works, for I have not done them of my own mind. This is verse 28. Moses told them, he said, now look, all of you senators and representatives and all of you people out there, I didn't come over here and set myself up to be an Adolf Hitler. That wasn't my idea. I'm just doing what God told me to do, and so I'm cast in this role, but I didn't do it of and by myself. Now, if these men die the common death of all men, if this guy Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, if they die of old age, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then you will all know that the Eternal has not sent me. But, now pay attention now, but if the Eternal makes a new thing, and if the earth opens her mouth, and if the earth swallows them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quickly into the pit, then you shall know and you shall understand that these men have provoked the Eternal, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's a pretty good test. Moses now tells all the people out there, he says, now listen, let's wake up here, smell the coffee. If these boys die of old age, then you'll know that God has not sent me. I'm not the right guy. But now, if a new thing occurs, if something that you have never seen in the history of the world to this date, if the earth opens up, if there is an earthquake and it splits, and this guy Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and all of their wives and all of their sons and all of their little children fall down into that pit and are consumed and destroyed in it, you'll know that it's God that has done this, not me. Hey, that's a pretty good test, wouldn't you say? All right, got the picture here. Verse 31 comes up. And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder and was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and all of their houses, and all of the men that appertained unto Korah, and all of their goods, all of their sheep, all of their donkeys, all of their cattle, their tents, their gold, their silver, their wheat, their corn, their beans, their honey, their oil. Little babies nursing on their mother's breasts, and little children, little boys and girls, 4 years old, 6 years old, 12 years old, fell into this hole in the ground and were totally destroyed by this God. That's why my granny said she would never become a Christian. She was anti-religion. She thought that the God of the Bible and religion had something in common. They didn't, but she thought they did. And she said the Bible is a bloody book. It's bloody. It's just filled with violence. Boy, you can say that again, Granny. Boy, talk about violence now. Now, I wanted to point this out. Are y'all paying attention to what's going on here? This is a political convention going on here. We've got a dissatisfied group of people that want change. They're not satisfied with the government the way it's constituted. This is kind of like our last election for the rest of you people around the world. We Americans, we just had an election here, see? And we voted in a stranger. We were told by our God, this God here, he said, you are never to set a stranger up to rule over you. And so, you know, we're smarter than this God, and so we set a stranger to rule over us, a black man, Barack Obama, which is great for black people, and I'm all for you, but that's your man, there's no doubt about it. I just want to let you know that us Israelites over here, every one of you white Anglo-Saxons that voted for Barack Obama now, you violated a law. There's a law here that says don't do that. I don't know if you were aware of that or not, but, you know, all you Democrats out there, pay attention. All you independents. Now, you Republicans were all right, I guess. You voted for the white guy, but I just wanted to let you know here that this God over here is a racist. I've pointed that out to you in the past. And so I wanted to let you know that this guy over here, and he's meaner than cat dirt. And on top of that, he commits genocide from time to time. You know, not every day, but, you know, from time to time, he just kills whole groups of people. I mean, men, women, and children. No prisoners. So if this is the God for you, well, then this is the one you want to be following. And, of course, if you want a kinder, gentler God, then you need somebody else. You don't want this guy. Now, this guy ain't kind, he ain't gentle. As you can see here. And he's not a Democrat. That's why I've often said, you know, Moses was a Republican. And Moses was in the White House. And the loyal opposition said, hey, listen, we think you're taking too much power upon you, and we want control of the White House as well as Congress. And so God said, okay, well, let's have an election. And we just had an election here. Did you see it? The earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up and their houses and all the men that appertained to Korah and all of their goods. They and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit. They were buried alive. That's not a good way to go. And the earth closed upon them and they perished from among the congregation. And all of Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. I mean, this was quite a little show. You talk about an election. Now, this is an election. And 3.5 million people now are gathered around watching the election. They're waiting for the returns to come in. And when the returns came in, the ground opened up. And all of the Democrats fell down into the hole. Not just Henry Paulson and Kissinger and Bush and Rockefeller and Armitage and, you know, and all the politicians here, you know. But their wives and their children and their cattle and their houses. Everything that they had went down into the hole. And then God said, well, the election is over and the results are known. And the will of God has now clearly been shown. So in case you people out there thought that this God was a Democrat and that he was promoting democracy or some kind of representative form of government, I got to tell you, as a reporter now, you know, I'm not here as a religionist trying to get you to give your heart to Jesus or something. I'm just telling you that as a reporter, that isn't the way this political process works here, not from the biblical point of view. Now, in addition to that, there came out a fire from the Eternal and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. So now, remember these 250 politicians over here that were offering the incense? A lightning bolt came down and consumed them all. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, and he said, "Now you speak to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, that he take up the censers out of the burning and scatter you the fire yonder, because they are hallowed." And in verse 38 he says, "The censers of these sinners against their own souls, let them make them broad plates for a covering of the altar, for they offered them before the Eternal. Therefore they are hallowed, and they shall be a sign unto the children of Israel forever."
Hey.
He said, "Now you go out there and you take these censers, melt them down, make a plate, put it before the altar." I mean, these guys walked in here and they wanted to offer an offering by fire unto me. Now, they made those holy. I won't accept it, but they made them holy. So here's what we're going to do. And so Eleazar, this is Aaron's boy now, his son. "The priest took the brazen censers wherewith they that were burnt had offered, and they were made broad plates for a covering of the altar, to be a memorial unto the children of Israel, that no stranger, which is not of the seed of Aaron, come near to offer incense before the Eternal, and that he be not as Korah and as his company, as the Eternal said to him by the hand of Moses." Now, with that much in mind, I mean, here's 250 guys over here. They're all killed. Then all of their wives and families and little babies and children and infants sucking on their mother's breasts are consumed and destroyed, dead, all of them. Not a one of them died of old age now. It so terrified the voters, that is the congregation, that they fled in terror. The next day comes up. Here's the very next day. The day after the election, listen to this. This is in verse 41. "But on the morrow, all of the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, 'You have killed the people of God.'" Can you believe this? Can you believe that crap? Huh? Let me read that to you again. Now, keep this in mind. You got to read this for yourself. I couldn't make this up. I mean, you can't make this kind of crap up. This is from the Bible itself. "We've just had an election. These people are challenging Moses and his authority, his selection by God. And so God says, 'Okay, let's have an election. I'll choose.' He kills 250 of these suckers, with all of their families, all of their wives. In fact, he'll tell you a little later on, 14,800 people died that day. Listen to this. "But on the morrow, the day after this had all taken place, the children of Israel, the 3.5 million in the congregation, all the people, murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, 'You have killed the people of the Eternal.' It came to pass, when the congregation was gathered against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tabernacle of the congregation, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Eternal appeared. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of the congregation, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, and he said," Moses, "'Get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them as in a moment.' And again, Moses and Aaron fell on their faces. And Moses said unto Aaron, 'Quick, quick, take a censer and put fire therein from off the altar, and put on incense, and go quickly unto the congregation, and make an atonement for them. For there is great wrath gone out from the Eternal, and the plague is begun.'" Now, boys and girls, we are living in an era. You know, this is the era where we have sodomy rampant in America. We have abortion rampant in America. And now we have just elected a stranger to rule over us. We're using unjust weights and balances, and our economy is collapsing around us. And we're all sitting here saying, I just don't understand why God would do such a thing to us. Boys and girls, may I suggest that the people of America have lost their minds? For the rest of you people out there in the rest of the world, we Americans have just gone stark raving mad over here. We have just gone totally insane. There just isn't any other word to describe it. And then we're walking around over here like we're in a fog. We just don't understand why God would do such a thing to us. 65% of us go to church every Sunday. 65% of us. We not only have our heads up our hind ends over here, we're religious on top of it. Well, anyway, Moses and Aaron, they came up to the congregation. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, get away from these people. I'm going to kill them all. So he begins a plague over here. So Aaron, he took, as Moses told him, and he ran into the midst of the congregation. And behold, the plague was begun among the people. And he put on incense and he made an atonement for them. And he stood there between the dead and the living. And the plague was stayed. Now, they that died in the plague were 14,700. Beside them that died about the matter of Korah. And Aaron returned unto Moses unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the plague was stayed. You got that? Now, I said 14,800. I missed it by 100. It's 14,700. 14,700 people that day died. Why? Well, because they got uppity. They decided to have an election. So I just thought, you know, I'd make a report to you and tell you that, hey, this isn't the program. Voting and democracy isn't the program. In fact, if voting was the solution to your people's problems out there, you wouldn't have any problems to start with because voting would have already solved it. No, boys and girls, voting isn't the solution to your problem. Voting is the cause of your problem. So if you want to vote, you know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But I wanted to tell you that this God here, this guy is not gonna sit still for you deciding who's going to rule over the nation. I mean, that isn't going to happen. It just isn't going to happen. Now, there's another little story over here. I've only got about 5 or 6 minutes left here. Now, in 1 Samuel 8, verses 1 through 22, it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. We've got another election coming up here. So. And the name of the firstborn was Joel, and the name of the second was Abijah, or Abiah, and they were judges in Beersheba. And his sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside after lucre. They were taking bribes. Listen. They were doing just what we're doing today. You know, they were lobbyists, and they were taking bribes from the lobbyists, and they were giving out political favors, you know, and that was against the law, and they took bribes, and they perverted judgment. Hell, they were just doing like politicians do, just natural. And so all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together, and they came to Samuel at Ramah. They said to him, well, behold, you're old, and your sons don't walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. And the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed to the Eternal. He prayed to God. And the Eternal said to Samuel, now hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto you, because they have not rejected you, Samuel. They have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. And according to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, wherewith they have forsaken me, and they have served other gods, and so do they also unto you today. So therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. Well, you know, nothing's changed. Hell, we're the same today here in the United States that we've always been. We have always rebelled against our God, against our Creator. And now, we not only have rebelled, we have now set a stranger over us. Isn't that just special? You see, back in Samuel's day, we said, we're going to reject you, God, and we want a king, like all the nations around us. And so we got permission to get a king, and so we had a king. We called him King George, and we rebelled against the king that we wanted. Can you believe it? I'm not making this up. I'm just a reporter. This is 1 Samuel chapter 8. This is Numbers chapter 16. We Israelites have never been happy with our God. Never. Not once. And then we haven't been very happy with our kings either. And so we threw King George out. And then we put George Washington in. We decided we're going to have our own form of government. Now, God told you, said, now listen, don't set a stranger over you. And so we said, oh, no. Now we're going to set a Canaanite over us. Well, okay, boys and girls, now that it's already been done, as a reporter, I just want to tell you, I think that's going to come to a no good end. Now listen to this. This shall be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He's going to take your sons and appoint them for himself for his chariots and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots, and he shall appoint them captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and he's going to set them to ear his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and the instruments of his chariots. You're going to have military conscription and war. That's the results that's coming. And he's going to take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers. That's why 50% of you women are now out in the workforce. And he's going to take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards and the best of them and give them to his servants. And that's why we're going to have change, boys and girls. We're going to adopt the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And he's going to take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and servants. You're going to have more taxes. And then he's going to take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. And then he's going to take the tenth of your sheep and you're going to be his servants. You're going to go into national captivity, boys and girls. And then in that day you will cry out in that day because of your king, which you have set and which you have chosen you, and the Eternal will not hear you in that day. Now, nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but we will have a king over us, that we may also be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. All right. Well, now we've done that. Been there, done that. So now when this new president, Barack Obama, takes you under the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and into national captivity, and when you cry out to Jesus, and Jesus doesn't answer you, now you know why. And it's because Jesus doesn't vote. And he ain't running for public office. Now, how do you like that kettle of fish? Well, I'm out of time here again, boys and girls, and so I've got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and the editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.